Welcome into the Golf Channel podcast. I'm your host, Will Gray, joined now by GolfChannel.com senior writers Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner. We are putting a bow on 2017. We're looking ahead, boys, to 2018.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
2018.
From the past. So this is the non-Tiger division. We've set aside a good chunk of time to talk about various predictions and prognostications for Tiger, but let's look at the other, 1,500 golfers in the world that may grab headlines from time to time in 2018. Rex, let's start with you. What is one storyline you're most looking forward to watching in the new year?
It's always the same when we go into these years, right?
It's Tiger.
No, not really. I mean, it's always the Ryder Cup. I mean, when we sit here next year at this time, we're going to be talking about the Ryder Cup. However that plays out, either the U.S. finally wins after more
25 years.
Yeah, more than two decades of going overseas and getting boat raced, or it's another walkover, whatever the case may be. There's a hero that comes out. It always seems to be European. It's always about the Ryder Cup. Look, there'll be special things that happen at the Masters, at the Majors. There'll be things that come up over the course of the year that are very, very notable, but it's always the Ryder Cup. I mean, it's the one event in golf, maybe outside of the Masters, that never fails to disappoint.
I would agree that that's the event that everyone's got circled on their calendar, and for a good reason. I think the U.S. team over the past two international team competitions has shown something they probably haven't shown in decades.
Fire,
desire.
Yeah, whatever it is.
There's just so much optimism surrounding this American team that I think even though they are going to foreign soil and even though they haven't won over there in 25 years, I think there's an expectation based on what they did at Hazeltine and what they did just a couple of months ago at Liberty National that this team should run roughshod over this European team. It's probably going to consist of that same core of players that we saw at Liberty National, and that team was almost historically great.
And there's a lot of optimism that came out of Liberty National for a lot of good reasons.
Too much?
Maybe a little bit, because these are two different animals. I mean, and look, the young guys will figure it out. Some of the guys already know it. Certainly Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth have been exposed to losses as well as victories when it comes to the Ryder Cup. But we always get caught up in these paper lions, right? Like, the United States should be the better team. It should
every year.
Every single year they show up. But there is something different about this group. There is a sense among them that they're the best team, best American team that's been assembled for decades now. And it's hard to debate that. Coming out of next year's, I think we'll have a better handle on exactly how good they are, how they handle this unique kind of pressure. But it will be interesting to watch. And it's injected new life into an event that already had plenty of life.
Or go ahead.
I was going to say, if they can win in Paris, yeah. I mean, I think the lid's off on where this run of American dominance is going to go. If they can get over the hurdle,
two decades.
If they can get over the hurdle of ending,
two decades. Good.
Look at the core of the team. We're talking about 24-year-olds.
It never goes in those sustained runs like that. Even on the European side, the last.
It's been eight of what? 8 of 10 for Europe.
Yeah. So it did.
That's two decades.
And that was essentially the same core group. I mean, we're talking about Lee Westwood.
That 800.
That was talking about Sergio. I mean, we're talking about this core group of players. And if these guys are as good as they were at Liberty National, now, let's face it, it's the international team. They're just not that good.
Yes.
I mean, for whatever reason.
Shout out to the international team.
Shout out to the international team. I feel for them. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what their...
It's just not fair.
I don't know what their motivation is to show up in 2 years at the next President's Cup, even on their soil,
so to speak. It's a nice trip to Royal Melbourne. The worst places to be.
It's beautiful. There's worse places to be. But, I mean, you have to feel sorry for them. But you wonder if inside their European team room now they're kind of looking over their shoulder, because they certainly haven't the last decade, two decades.
Yeah. Well, part of that core that we're talking about is the top three in the world rankings going into 2018 are all Americans. The first time that's happened since, I believe, 2009. But we're talking Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth, Justin Thomas, Lav. Of those three, who do you expect to have the best year in 2018?
I think the default answer is Spieth, because he's had one down year in his very short career. I think I'm most interested, however, to see Justin Thomas in 2018. We did a class of 2011 project a couple of weeks ago for GolfChannel.com. And during the reporting of that, I talked to Scott Limbaugh, who recruited Justin Thomas to Alabama. He's now the coach at Vanderbilt. And Limbaugh made the point that Justin Thomas has always been able to create a chip better than anyone that Limbaugh has ever seen. And that carried him through junior golf, because JT was never the best junior golfer. In college, even though he won the Haskins Award everyone looked at Spieth. Spieth gets the pros, Spieth wins a major. Thomas has always been a little bit behind. So now that JT's had this career year, he wins five times, he is player of the year, he's the FedEx Cup champion, he's cracked the top five in the world ranking. Where does he go from here? Where does he get that hunger from? Where is his motivation? That's what Limbaugh was most interested to see. You know, how can he create that chip that has made him so great to this point? He's 24 years old. Where does he get that chip now in 2018 after having all that success?
And JT talked about this. I mean, he talked about having to reset those goals on his phone and wanting to talk to Jordan and Tiger and Jack Nicklaus and these other guys who have gone through these historic seasons and accomplished all these goals. How do you reload going into next season? I mean, he's from Alabama, so that should help. I mean, let's face it, they're pretty good at doing that. But it will be difficult. That will be a new challenge that he's never faced before. And look, I agree with you. Jordan Spieth, I'm out of the Jordan Spieth doubting business. Because I kept expecting him early in his career to hit the wall, and he simply has not done that. He continues to amaze.
We've done these podcasts before. You said Jordan Spieth cannot keep making putts like he had. You said
so
that
he
repeatedly.
Upped his iron game. That's
so, exactly. So he became the best iron player on tour.
So like I said, I'm out of the Jordan Spieth doubting business. I mean, he's just proven that he's able to overcome whatever it is thrown in his direction. Certainly, when you look at what he did at the Open Championship,
13th hole,
or range, however you want to look at that. But I'm going to go another way. I'm going to go Dustin Johnson. It seems like we have such short memories when it comes to this sport. And when you go back to last spring, and he was the hottest player on the planet,
it wasn't even close.
Tiger-like.
It was Tiger-like. I mean, there was no way anyone was beating him at Augusta. The only thing that could beat him at Augusta was apparently some slippery socks and some stairs that he fell down and hurt his back. And that's the only thing that stalled him. And I just don't see, either from a motivation standpoint, from a talent standpoint, from the physical things he's able to do on a golf course, how he doesn't pick up where he left off. And once you put, let's go down the list. Let's put all these guys head to head. And if all of them are at their best, we can play who wins this matchup, who wins that matchup. Mm-hmm. I'm going to argue that 9 times out of 10, Dustin Johnson comes out ahead.
DJ is like a great wide receiver in the NFL. You just know that he's going to get his. You know he's going to get his 150 yards and his touchdown.
You're just living in that fantasy football world.
But like, camps on it, dude. How's your team doing? Good?
That's a podcast. That's a very sad podcast for a different day. I'm saying the point of this is that Dustin Johnson's going to get his 2 to 4 wins in a year. You know it's going to
I'm going to go more towards four. And I think it's going to be another major because you start looking at Belrive. You start looking at how these
four wins in a major. We're talking about DJ's player of the year.
And look, he really made a good argument for being player of the year and missing a good portion of the year. And I'm not taking anything away from Justin Thomas. He had a phenomenal year.
But we're talking in the playoffs. If Dustin wins
Cup, it's a conversation and it goes in his favor. No, without a doubt. And again, that's missing a large portion of the season. I just think physically he's able to do things that these other guys cannot. Now, maybe Rory, if he comes back healthy and he's happy and all those things fall into place for him again, has the ability to do that. Maybe Jason Day. Similar scenarios, I'll put the same caveats on him. But right now, it's Dustin who's able to produce that week in and week out more consistently than anyone else.
Well, I was going to say, we're on the flip side of things, you got DJ, Spieth, and Justin Thomas are going 1-2-3, but the two guys that started the year 1-2 are Jason Day and Rory McIlroy. They both end the year outside the top 10. Lav, two very different sort of bounce-back viewpoints for these two guys that both went through a frustrating and soul-searching 2017. What do you think about their chances, and maybe who do you like better going into 18?
Yeah, I think you can make the case for both of them that had off-the-course things that that detracted from their performance on the golf course in 2017. Jason Day had the issue with his mom, and you know the relationship with his caddy, and swing coach and father figure soured as the year went on. And with Rory, he's getting married, he's changing equipment, he's dealing with a nagging rib injury
year. Flip that order there. Rory got hurt 3 weeks into the year, and that changed everything for how...
Didn't have the chance to prepare like he wanted to.
So I think when you look for bounce back potential, I think it's always going to be Rory. I think looking in hindsight, you can almost say that Jason Day caught a hell of a heater for 2 years. Now, is he capable of producing that type of golf again? Probably. He needs to get his driver situated, and he needs to get his putter straightened out. If he can get those two most important clubs in the bag straightened out, you know, I think he can win multiple times again in a year. But I think Rory has, as we've seen in the past, that alpha dog, that superstar, that number one in the world potential, the potential to dominate the game that I'm not sure Jason Day has.
Rex, one way or another, we're going to be talking a lot about Rory in the first couple months of the year, just because
playing a ton,
playing a
super
lot,
super ambitious schedule. He's made no bones about the fact that he is trying to chase down the last leg of the career Grand Slam. He's put a big emphasis on his Masters prep, and this year he's going to try and do it a different way. We could be talking about maybe up to 8 tournaments that he's going to play before he even gets to the Masters across the PGA.
Hope that rib is sealed.
European Tour, exactly. He's trying to get back and go jump right into the deep end. But what are your thoughts on Rory, and then specifically about how that schedule might shape up for him?
I don't have a problem with having an ambitious schedule. That doesn't mean you have to play all those events. If your body doesn't react, if your game doesn't react the way you want to, there's no rule that says he can't pull the plug on a couple of those. Let's be honest.
Tampa.
Sure. I mean, I think there's plenty of things you can do. To go back to your original question, yes, I agree with what Lav says. It's going to be Rory. If we're sitting here next year and Rory does not have a good season, I'm going to be more surprised that he didn't have a good season than I am Jason Day. And look, you can talk about Jason's driving, you can talk about his putting. It's all in between his ears. And splitting with Cole Swatton, as you pointed out, is probably not the best thing for him. So I don't know how he rebounds, as opposed to Rory, who's going into the season excited. He's going into the season with a very, very busy schedule. He's going into the season having actually spent an offseason working on all those changes he talked about. And again, I think he has the ability to compete against Dustin Johnson if both of those games are on. And that would be fun to watch. And I don't want to take anything away from Jordan or Justin or any of the other young players. But again, if you put all of these guys head-to-head at their absolute best, I think Dustin and Rory get the best of those guys more times than not.
I love seeing Rory say that he's going to play 8 times, and whether he actually plays 8 times is irrelevant. The thing that I wanted to see during this break, where I wanted to see his wedge game improve, I wanted to see his putter improve. I think we're going to find out quickly whether that's the case, and I wanted to see him hungry again. I think there was some questions in a narrative that developed this year whether Rory has the motivation and the hunger to keep up with these guys. I remember Steve Elkington writing on Twitter, "Hey, this guy's just happy with, you know, the numbers in his bank account." And Rory kind of took some heat for that. Whether there's some truth to that, we don't really know. We're not inside Rory's head. But I wanted to see the hunger back in Rory. I want to see him reclaim number one. I want to see him go win one race. I want him to think that, you know, these last few years haven't been up to his standard. I want to see him go out and try and play. And I think we're going to see that for the first 4 months of the season. Whether he plays bad or not, at least we're going to see Rory get out there and want to test himself. I think that's a step in the
right
direction.
There's two elements of that. Now, I agree with you. The motivation has been strange the last few years. I don't know if he's lost it, but let's face it, once you get to a certain point in your career, it's easy to get distracted by other things, whether that's getting married, new equipment contract, whatever the case may be. He's got two built-in motivators right now. He's got the Masters, which is obviously at the top of the list to complete the career Grand Slam, and then he has the Ryder Cup, which he treats just like the Masters. So I think he's got two bookend elements to his season that will keep him motivated and keep him fired up.
We talked a lot about what Justin Thomas is going to do as a follow-up to a Player of the Year campaign in 2018. But we got together, I think, last week or a couple weeks ago, and we put our predictions in for the 2018 majors, who's going to win each major. And I came off of our taping there, and I realized we did not at any point mention the name Jon Rahm. And oversight or otherwise, it's we're going to find out. But he is certainly in that category of what can you do as a follow-up. Rocketing up the world rankings from outside the top 100 to now number 4 in the world, winning 3 times, bookends at Torrey and Dubai. Lav, what are your thoughts on essentially the sophomore season for Jon Rahm as a professional?
Better get used to it. I think 3 wins is like the template for what he's going to do every year, whether he builds off that, I think is certainly possible. I mean, this is a guy who's got literally every single tool in the tool shed. He's one of the best drivers on the PGA Tour. In his first year on tour, playing a golf course that he's seen for the very first time, he was 3rd on tour in strokes gained tee to green. There is no weakness in this guy's game. I think it shows winning in San Diego, winning in Ireland, winning in Dubai, that this guy's game travels. I think 3 wins is the start of what this guy can do per year. I did not put him as one of my major predictions, probably foolishly, because I do think he's going to contend for one of them. And I think the great thing about Jon Rahm is you don't know which major it's going to be, right, but you wouldn't be surprised
any
if it's any of them.
Any of the 4. And look, let's be honest. I mean, the fact of the matter is none of us are going to be surprised if he does win a major next year. He has the game, as you pointed out. I mean, to do what he did his rookie year on the PGA Tour, didn't call it his rookie year, but it was essentially his rookie year. I think the problem is we have this embarrassment of riches now, where there's only four.
There's only four majors,
and the fact is we can go a list of five, six, seven, eight players deep, and of course that John Rahm would be on that list, but you only have so many open spots, so it's difficult to sit here. But no, I don't think anyone would be shocked if he wins three, four times next season and a major.
There is one area I think that Rahm can improve, and I think he'd be the first to admit it, is his mental strength. I think we saw at the U.S. Open he had just an absolute meltdown. This guy has all the physical tools, but if he can kind of straighten out, if he can learn to harness his anger, I mean his anger management, if he can somehow learn to deal with that in a better way, whether it's dealing with a former bomb disposal expert, which he's currently working with, or whatever the case is, I think this guy is the number one player in the world. John Rahm is the number one player in the world eventually if he can tick that final box and learn how to harness that.
And that's what Justin Thomas did so well last season. I mean, that's really, if you look at all the bits and pieces of his game, we can break it down and talk about the little things he did better. But the biggest thing, and he talked about this at length, is getting an experienced caddy on the bag who keeps him under control and doesn't allow him to get angry with just one missed shot. Look, you can miss a shot and still win a tournament.
Yep, great point.
Justin Thomas, John Rahm both took big strides. In 2017, we saw Xander Schauffele go from off the radar to winning twice, including the Tour Championship. Do you guys have anyone in mind for a potential leap candidate in 2018? We've already seen guys like Patrick Cantlay and Austin Cook both win in the fall portion of the new PGA Tour wraparound schedule. Lav, I know you and I have had several discussions about the high ceiling for Peter Uihlein now that he is finally entrenched on
a PGA Tour rookie,
by
definition only.
We'll do a separate podcast for how Peter Uihlein is, by the rules, a rookie on the PGA Tour.
John Rahm was not.
And Bo Hostler is not this year. Set that up.
Bryson DeChambeau. You can go down the list.
Yeah, I think you can do these leaps in tiers. So I think a player who's already established, who's going to take the leap next year, and we've probably been saying this for the last 5 years, I think is Ricky Fowler. This is not a quick reaction to what he did at the Hero, shooting 61 in the final round. This is a guy who has taken immense strides with his putting and short game that was probably lacking a couple years ago. He's a guy who, I think he's, Rex, correct me if I'm wrong, you see your buddies win a bunch, you see Justin Thomas, you're congratulating him, you're congratulating Spieth, that's got to wear on you. I mean, seeing that over and over again, being the bridesmaid, that has to wear on you. I think Ricky Fowler probably gets knocked too much for being too much of a nice guy. You know, he doesn't have that quote-unquote killer instinct. I think 2017 should have provided all the motivation that he needs to take that next step and just clear that final hurdle to be a major champion.
No, and he's an easy choice in this particular category, but I'll go back to what Butch Harmon told me Saturday afternoon at the U.S. Open when it seemed like he was putting himself back in contention. Yeah, of course, he's taken all the steps. It seems like a major is the next logical step, but Butch goes, he still has to do it. He still has to go out there and find a way to win. And look, that's an acquired skill. It's not like you're born with that. I don't believe that. You have to figure out how to win, particularly on Sunday at a major championship, and he still has to do it. And I don't know, you can go through a list of young players who you feel like could take the next leap. I mean, you know them better than I do, Ryan, but Patrick Rogers, I mean, all these guys who have been around, I just mentioned Bryson DeChambeau, all these guys seem to continue to improve year in and year out. Who's going to be the next one?
I think Aaron Wise, former NCAA champion, he comes off. He strikes me as a guy who he could win a tournament and miss four cuts in a row, and then he could have a top five and finish 40th for five straight events. He's kind of that hot or cold type of talent, but I think all the talent is there. This is kind of cheating a little bit, but, man, the ceiling on Patrick Cantlay is exceptionally high.
What he did in limited starts last year is amazing. To make it to the Tour Championship with a dozen starts, was that it?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I argued with you on a couple on the clocks that we did that this guy should be on the President's Cup team.
Yeah, he still shouldn't have been on the President's Cup team.
But of course he should have.
No, of course he should not.
He's going to be on the team.
Who are you taking off?
He's going to be. I could take off.
Because you're going to take someone off with a winning record, so I want to hear this.
I'd take off Charlie Hoffman. I'd take off Kevin Kisner.
They had winning.
Qualified.
He qualified, yeah. But
Patrick Cantlay would have qualified, is the argument that you would make if he had the starts and the 2-year window. Well, a year and a half.
But now you're extrapolating results back retroactively.
Yeah, you exactly. You can't do that. No, I mean, you can't take someone off that qualifies. And if you want to take Charlie Hoffman off, I mean, he had a winning record. How do you take him off?
He had a winning record after the fact.
Well, yeah, that's the point.
You didn't know that when you made the picks?
Well, yeah, because I can look back at history the way things played out and say, you can't look back at history and say, oh, well, he would have had a great 2016. You can't do that.
Patrick Cantlay could have gone undefeated. Who knows?
Listen,
playing that game.
As the president of the Brooks Koepka should have made Glenn Eagles fan club, I say, let's just move on. You're never going to know. Maybe he'll be on the team in Paris.
He's going to be on the team.
We're talking about John Rahm. Brooks Koepka.
Yes.
As far as winning another major. I mean, he has to be the guy that wins a major. Maybe, I mean, we can probably go back, pick out some primary examples. I mean, Sean McKeel probably comes to mind. But, I mean, absolutely no respect whatsoever. I mean, he isn't mentioned at all in any of these podcasts.
It's true.
And he has all the similar skills that we just talked about with Dustin, and yet somehow he's falling under the radar, which is amazing to me.
Which I think is kind of his persona. I think he's more than happy to fly under the radar.
And I think DJ's perfectly happy to fly under the radar. It's an interesting dynamic.
But it is kind of interesting that he waxed the field that final day at Erin Hills when you had Justin Thomas near the lead, you had Ricky Fowler, you had a lot of different storylines in play, and with six holes to go, we looked up at the leaderboard, and Hideki Matsuyama, who we also haven't mentioned, you look up at the leaderboard.
Tough 15 in all four majors last year.
Right. You look at the leaderboard, and you're like, oh, this is pretty much done. Let's start cranking.
Yeah, and you can say what you want about the golf course. Let's face it, Erin Hills was not popular, but you're still beating the best field in golf.
Right.
And he, people just say he's just a brainless basher, and Erin Hills kind of is perfect for his type of game.
And I would disagree. However, I would disagree with that notion, but yes.
However, he's shown that his game plays well anywhere. He's a consistent top-tier finisher in every major that he plays.
Several new courses coming into the rotation for 2018. Major-wise, we're going Shinnecock, Carnoustie, Belle Reve. We've got Trinity Forest added to host the Nelson. We're going to Aronimink for the BMW Championship. Anything sticking out? Lav, are you excited to head back towards your old stomping grounds up at Shinnecock this June?
I think Shinnecock can be really interesting. I hope, I'm expecting the USJ to keep the greens alive this time. But I think that's a great venue. I don't think it favors any particular style of game. And I'm curious to see what the USJ is going to do after Erin Hills. They've vowed not to make any drastic
measures. They're going
to
play nice.
They're not going to have some overreaction to the scoring that we saw in Wisconsin. However, I'm skeptical.
They're going to play nice. There's no doubt in my mind. And this goes back.
How nice can you play at Shinnecock, though?
Well, and I go, but this is a specific quote. And as journalists, you guys, I'm sure, have done the same thing. We were scrumming with Mike Davis last year during the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, and he said someone was asking about Shinnecock, and he goes, that mistake, of course, the last time it was there, won't happen again. If it does, I'll retire. And, of course, that one you scribble down very, very quickly. And, you know, I put it in my calendar to revisit the first week of June next year because you have to go back and look at it. But it's a telling comment that, no, they're not going to let it get out of control again.
They could trick it up.
It's a new and improved, and they probably will trick it up to a certain degree, but it's a new and improved USGA that they understand that they can easily get embarrassed. And they cannot have that. So they will err on the side of caution, again, like they have the last few years.
Yeah, they've lost the benefit of the doubt.
But it's the venue
with
I'm
players.
Most looking forward to.
Yeah, 100%.
Let's be honest. I mean, you love going to the Masters, and Belle Reve is Belle Reve. Carnoustie
is going to be a bear.
Yeah, but, I mean, Shinnecock is going to be interesting considering the history there. And it's back in the rotation two more times, so it's not as though it's going anywhere.
Yep, better get used to it because we got another 8 years. They'll be coming right back down the pike. Is this the year that Phil gets back in the winner's circle? We're going on 5 years since Muirfield.
Same conversation we had about Tiger. I mean, we could sit here and say that his game's trending in that direction, but he still has to beat this young crop of players now.
But he's had several bites at the apple. He's had a lot of chances over the last couple of years. I think back to Pebble 2 years ago. I mean, he's had chances. This hasn't been able to
Pebble, the Open, St. Jude. I mean,
St. Jude's the one that sticks out. And look, that's back-to-back years when he had an opportunity to win at St. Jude. And I just think that his game, it continues to improve. He's in great shape for a 40-something, you know, a guy in his mid-40s. But the fact is, he's competing against those 7, 8 guys that we just talked about week in and week out. And it's hard to get those opportunities now for someone in his category.
Yeah, I'd say he's still – the problem he's had is that he's still struggling to put 4 good rounds together. And when you put it with Phil's schedule and the type of tournaments that he plays, it's going to be really hard for him to do. I don't see him winning again. But I'm more.
You don't see him winning, period?
I see him winning on the PGA Tour Champions.
Wow, you think he has won for the last time on the Under 50 circuit?
I do.
Yeah, I can kind of see that. And again, I mean, we're talking about the Ryder Cup. It's going to be such a difficult position. Well, here's the deal. If he picks and chooses his spots, Phil could probably go somewhere and win. I don't think career builder is out of the realm of possibility.
Well, that's the thing. We always talk about Tiger. Oh, he should play these other events.
Phil plays the other events.
Phil plays Memphis. He plays Greenbrier. He plays.
But he gets beat by Daniel Berger in Memphis. I mean, it's tough. Again, you're going against these young guys that don't have any institutional knowledge when it comes to I should be afraid with Phil in the final pairing. They don't live by that code anymore.
Yeah. And Phil admitted at the FedEx event when he saw his name on top of the leaderboard, it surprised him. That's a hurdle that he has to get over, and it's not going to get any easier now that you're 4.5 years removed from your last victory.
We shall see. Well, I figure that's as good a place as any.
Sorry, Phil.
Phil, for the record, I think will win at some point.
You didn't mention Le Golf National as a new venue. You're not excited about that for the Ryder Cup?
I'm very excited about that. Right. Yeah.
That makes one of us.
Outside Paris. We'll talk about my summer abroad in France. It was excellent. Versailles is very nice.
It's very nice.
Yeah, I think that the countdown to Paris is on for a variety of interested parties.
Including Patrick Cantlay, who will be there.
Probably, because now he's had those 2 years, not that fantasy year that you keep wanting to camp on. He had such a good fantasy year.
Even though he's carrying 0 points into 2018 because he wasn't there for the majors.
He will accrue many.
Well, he's starting in a hole.
Taking a leap in 2018.
Not too much of a leap. Now, that I can live with. Demanding, he has to be on the team.
If you look at his body work, he should have been on the team.
All right, this discussion could go on for another half hour if we don't end it here. Patrick Cantlay, the very best of luck to you to see if you can support Ryan Lavner's bold prediction. But for Rex Hoggard, for Ryan Lavner, I'm Will Gray. This has been an enjoyable look back at 2017, look ahead to 2018. We'll be doing this again before you know it, boys. Have a good one. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.